This episode is sponsored by Tunbridge Accountants. Are you a creative entrepreneur looking for financial support? Do you need clarity around your numbers or help with decisions related to your business finances? Do you even know what all the numbers mean? Before I worked with Tunbridge Accountants, I definitely didn't. Wendy and Lawton are not just accountants, they're your partners in navigating the complexities of business finance. They make VAT, corporation tax, cash flow management, all of this really simple, guiding you through all the decisions you need to make, whether that's a company purchase, setting up a new business, whether to register as a business. Wendy and Lawton can give you really honest, practical advice on everything. And by letting them take care of your business finances, it then frees you up to focus on what you do best, creating and selling your products. So thank you again to Tunbridge Accountants for sponsoring this podcast.
Welcome to the Bring Your Product Ideas to Life podcast. Practical advice and inspiration to help you create and sell your own physical products. Here's your host, Vicky Weinberg.
Hello, today I'm talking to Kira from Pico Party. So Pico brings sustainability to all occasions with a current focus on children's events. So what Kira sells is sustainable party wear. And we had a really great conversation about why she chose to start a business selling these products, some of the issues around sourcing them, what sustainable party wear even is. And we covered all kinds of things. I was super, super impressed with everything that Kira shared and everything that she's done and her vision for the company. Pico is still a relatively new company, and yeah, I was super impressed and inspired by all that Kira's achieved and all that she plans for the future. So I really hope you feel as inspired by this conversation as I did, and I'd now like to introduce you to Kira. So hi, Kira. Thank you so much for being here.
Oh, no worries. I'm really happy to be here. I'm really excited.
Oh, excellent. Me too. So can we start with you, please, giving an introduction to yourself, your business and what you sell?
Yes. Yeah, so my name is Kira. I'm the founder of Pico. And what we sell in a nutshell is sustainable children's party products. So we started trading just over 3 months ago. But Pico has been in the making for just over a year. I first had the idea start of April last year. And basically why I started it was I was really shocked about the lack of sustainable party products in the market. And I really wanted to create a company that was, you know, also enjoying life. So having the parties, having these special occasions, but also kind of thinking of the planet at the same time. So all our products are completely plastic free, and that's plastic free in both the product and the packaging, because I used to get quite frustrated when I would order a paper party product and it would come wrapped in plastic. So that's something that's really important. And the beginning of the life of the products is thought about, so they've either been made from recycled materials or from FFC paper. Try to keep everything as in-house in the UK as possible to reduce the emissions. And also their afterlife has been carefully thought out. So, you know, making sure that these products can either be reused or recycled or either home composted as well. So I'd say that's in a nutshell what we do.
Oh, that's amazing. Thank you. And I was about to ask you what sustainable party wear was. So thank you for explaining that as well, because that's really useful, because I wasn't sure if everyone would sort of know what that term meant. So could you maybe, what might be nice if you can give us an example of some of your products? Because obviously I've had a really good look at your website and your range, but not everyone has. So what examples of, apart from the sort of paper plates and cups, what are some of the other products that you have?
So what we've started with is three ranges. So I'm starting with children's products. The reason why I did that is I come from a really big family, so I'm constantly surrounded by cousins. And, you know, most children do have a birthday party. So we started with three ranges, which are Dinosaur, Under the Sea and Safari. And we've started with tableware sets. So in the tableware set, you get a placemat, you get the plates, you get the cups and you get napkins. And that's all included in the Pico Party tableware set. And they've been designed. I'm really lucky. I've got a very close friend of mine who's an illustrated designer. So she has designed all the products, because another thing that I found with the market was there was, you know, few sustainable products, but the ones that were sustainable were quite boring and brown. And, you know, there's nothing wrong with that if that's the kind of vibe or theme that you're going with for your party. But I wanted to create really great looking party products that are stand out, but also have that sustainable aspect to them. So as well as like the tableware sets, we've also got like paper decorations. Again, these paper decorations, we've got like garlands, we've got like honeycomb balloons. I love the honeycomb balloons because they're shaped like balloons, but they're not actual balloons. And then we've also got the honeycomb balls as well. So it's, you know, small to start with, we're only 3 months, but I really want to expand the range even further. I'm already talking about what next tableware set we're going to add on, and then hopefully, you know, I think the next year stay within children's parties, but then hopefully start to expand the ranges even further to all different occasions.
Oh, thank you so much for explaining that, and I'm glad you talked about the honeycomb balloons because they're my personal favorite as well from your website, because I just think they're so clever. And yeah, the fact that I guess you can fold them flat again and then bring them out, I really like that. And that's something I've been trying to do myself, is sort of buy a birthday banner, but you know, without an age on it, so you can just bring out the same one every year. And I think that's quite nice as well, because it hopefully, as well as being sustainable, it will like for families create traditions if they always get out the same birthday banner or bunting or whatever it is. I think that's just a really nice thing to have.
Yeah, no, I 100% agree. And it's, you know, that reusable aspect. So at the moment, you know, we have just got the paper decorations, but all of them are really good quality. So it means that, like, I've used some of the honeycomb balloons, you know, multiple times. You just, as long as you're not like ripping things up and so forth, but you can, if you're careful, you can reuse them for, you know, one occasion and then another occasion, which is really, really great. And yeah, like with the happy birthday banners, things like that, that's something we're looking to add. So then you can put it in the drawer and then you can have it out, so you don't have to keep. I think we do have this culture of like, okay, it's a new party, it's a new event, we need to buy a new thing. But actually, I think we really do need to change, and it's going to take time. And I think even for myself, you know, you kind of have that culture of like, I need to buy a new thing for a new party, like you need to buy a new outfit. But trying to change that kind of mindset and trying to, you know, buying once and buying something that's, you know, fairly good quality, and then you can keep it for years to come.
Yeah, and I think as well, it probably is cheaper in the long run to do that as well. When you think of like cost per use, I'm sure that if you're taking care of that, you know, you've got a nice banner and you're taking care of it and you're using it, you know, year after year, it does become cheaper than buying sort of cheaper once, you know, one-time use things every year or every couple of times, you know, whatever, however often you have events. I definitely think it works out cheaper in the long run as well.
Oh yeah, 100%. And it's like, if you have some, like you said, that sentimental thing that you bring it out for every party, you can keep that from years to come if it's something that's, you know, of good quality, and then you can pass it on, say, to your child and then their child, and then they can keep it. It's a nice tradition to have. So yeah, I completely agree with that.
Definitely. So I think your sort of inspiration and your vision for Pico is so, so clear, Kira. But how did you go from that to actually setting up your business? So you mentioned you had a friend who helped you with the illustrations, but I guess there's so much else that goes alongside it. I guess, and a big part of that, and I don't want to preempt anything you're going to say, must be sort of finding suppliers that can deliver on your vision as well. So do you mind talking us through? So you came up with the idea, and then where you took it from there?
Yeah, definitely. It was a long process. So like I said, I started thinking about Pico in April of last year, and then we launched in February of this year. So I guess the reasoning behind Pico in a nutshell is, as I mentioned before, I come from a really big family. So my dad's one of 10 and my mum's one of 4. And I was constantly going to these, you know, parties, and it was just these products that were completely plastic. And I was just like, why is there nothing? That's shocking. That is there nothing out there? And to give you a bit more back of context, my last year of uni, I did quite a few modules on like ethics and sustainability and the circular economy. So it really kind of got my interest, and I've tried to be more sustainable in all my approaches. So it kind of just started out as me looking for products. Like I was like, I'm going to look for sustainable party products. And I was just really shocked. I was like, there isn't really much out there. There was maybe a few companies that had like a small sustainable range that was again, quite boring and nothing really that exciting. And I was just like, is there not one company, like their focus is about making party products more eco-friendly? And I just really couldn't find anything. So then I probably spent the next like 2-3 months really researching the market, looking at what the competitors were doing, just really making sure that there was nothing out there. Not that it maybe would have stopped me, but just if there's someone already doing it really well, maybe it would have, you know, stopped me from doing it. But I just couldn't find anything. And then the more I started to do it, the more I kind of became obsessed with it. So getting up really early, you know, working a full-time job, but then getting up at 5:30 to do Pico in the mornings and then Pico in the evenings, and obsessed, I think, in a really good way. You know, I sometimes it was hard because I was working long hours, but like I just really enjoyed doing it, and I really wanted to, you know, change the party industry. So and then in terms of like getting a supplier, well, suppliers, it was hard, it was tough, because and then I started to realize maybe why there wasn't anyone in the UK doing it, because it actually was really hard to find suppliers. So traditionally with the party industry, and the kind of companies out there at the moment, they get everything from China. So they have one manufacturer in China, and that manufacturer does their plates, their cups, their, you know, garlands, does everything. So they can make sure everything kind of looks, you know, united, and as well, it's just easier. They can go to this supplier and just be like, can you get this done? I really didn't want to do that. I wanted to keep things more in-house, close to the UK, just to save on the admission costs and, you know, really to try to keep that sustainability aspect at all times in all the products. So instead of going to one supplier, I had to go to multiple suppliers for different products. And that was tricky. I remember I probably spent about 5-6 months just trying to find a supplier, and it was tough. Like I couldn't find really ones at times that could do what I wanted. Like there would be some times that I would find one that could do what I wanted, but they wanted 100,000 minimum order quantity, and that was, you know, a huge investment for me at the beginning when I didn't really have the capital to do that, and I also didn't want to be investing in this huge stock and then not selling it and then having to pay for you know, somewhere to keep the stock. So it was a struggle, it really was, but I'm really glad I didn't give up, because then I did find suppliers who could do what I needed, and it's still, I would say, not perfect, but it's definitely closer to what I want it to be. So for example, the placemats are made in the UK, and so are the cups, and the napkins are made in Germany. So again, it could be UK, but there was no one in the UK that actually could print napkins that I needed. But that's something to think about for the future, you know, how I can bring that more in-house and maybe making the napkins in-house. So yeah, trying to keep everything as close to the UK as possible, but also having that sustainability aspect and the way the products are made and what the materials are made for. So yeah, it was a struggle, it was, but I think it worked. I kind of got there, and I think the more I'm actually in Pico, actually I have people reach out to me now, suppliers, which kind of blows my mind, because before I was always trying to reach out to them. So I think as we go, my aim is to just keep adding more products and really keep that sustainability, that eco-friendly aspect to them at all times. And I think we're just starting, and I think there's so many more things that we can do. But, you know, I think it's going to take time to get to, you know, make it even more eco-friendly as possible.
Yeah, I definitely agree that I'm sure that as the, you know, years go by, you will be doing more and then things will change. But I have to say, I'm really impressed, because I know you say it's taken a long time, but really in just over a year, you've done a huge amount. And yeah, I really resonated what you were saying as well about sort of getting up early and doing a couple of hours before you started your day. And I think that's just sometimes the way it has to be. And I'm really glad that you got where you needed to be in the end. And just when you're talking about the suppliers, so how were you finding them? Because I think that's something people might be interested in, is, you know, were you just using Google, or were you going to trade shows? What were you doing?
So I didn't actually go to any trade shows, but I think that would have been something that could have been a good idea, definitely. It was Google, but, you know, not just, I would say not just aimlessly kind of Googling and you know, just looking, I had like a really detailed spreadsheet, just making sure, you know, every time I'd contact probably like maybe 20 suppliers one morning. And then every time they got back to me, I would then comment if they couldn't do it or if they could, and making sure that, you know, I wasn't just reaching out to the same one twice. But also, you know, talking to other suppliers. So, you know, if maybe one supplier can't do what you want, just asking them, do you have any recommendations? You know, they've been in the industry normally for quite a long time. And that seemed to kind of help as well. But yeah, it was Googling was my main kind of way of finding them.
Yeah, I do think that's underestimated. Sometimes when people ask me how to find suppliers and I say Google, I think people think maybe there's more to it than that. But Googling in a spreadsheet is how I've always done it as well. And I don't know if you found the same, Kira, but something that I would add is I always found that you had to go beyond page one of Google. You had to go deeper into the searches than you would if you were doing like a regular search in your day-to-day life. Like sometimes the supplier you need might be on page four or page five, which most of us, let's face it, don't go that far. But I found that sometimes there'd be a great supplier, but they're a really small company based, you know, somewhere in the Midlands. And so they're on, you know, they're not on page one of Google, but they are exactly what you're looking for.
Yeah, no, 100%. I did the same thing, like, you know, trolling through Google and also trying to change what you're searching. So maybe changing like a few words. Like I was looking for full coverage napkins, which no one does in the UK, but trying to, you know, type it in a different way before I knew that, you know, it couldn't be UK based. But just changing that search term a little bit seemed to help. But yeah, it was a struggle, and it wasn't the funnest thing to do. It was exciting in a sense, because I was like, every time I got closer to finding a supplier, that was exciting, and then I got closer to making Pico, you know, the vision become reality. But I think it's definitely one of those things that you can't give up, because I remember there was points where I was like, I don't know if this is even possible, like I, you know, but I think you have to take, and it sounds so dramatic just trying to find a supplier, but that's what I needed to then make Pico, you know, become what it is. But I think, yeah, you just have to like kind of not give up and just keep looking, and just keep reaching out to people, and it will happen, which thankfully for me it did.
Yeah, thank you so much for explaining all of that, because finding a supplier is obviously one of the most important things, and I personally think it is possibly the hardest, and not hard in terms of what you have to do, because I mean it's relatively easy, isn't it? What am I trying to say? It is searching and reaching out to people, which isn't like a, you know, it's a skill that all of us can do it. But I think what's hard is the fact that it can be quite boring and quite soul destroying. And I like the point you made about trying different search terms in Google as well, because I think often we don't really even know what we're searching for, because sometimes searching like, I don't know, napkin supplier, I don't know if you found if the same, but often I think when you do any of these searches, what you end up with is a lot of wholesalers rather than the actual manufacturers. So I think, yeah, learning how to sort of tweak your searches in Google is definitely a skill as well. And you do need a fair bit of patience.
Oh, yeah, 100%. And I think, like, I had a lot of suppliers say to me, like, why don't you just buy products that are already made? And I was like, no, I want to start something new. I want to, you know, do something fresh. So, you know, and not, you know, sometimes you do need to listen to people, and if they have experience, 100%, I think do. But sometimes if you're going with your gut feeling, like there's so many times people said to me, why don't you just buy some things that are already made and, you know, resell them? And that probably would have been the easy route. But I'm really glad that I didn't, because now I think our products are great and they are really unique. And that's kind of the Pico branding, and that's what we want to be. And I wouldn't have been able to do that if I had products already in the market.
I'm so impressed, Kira, that how much you've held on to your vision. I just think that's so impressive. And I think it just goes to show that having a really clear vision, I think you do get there in the end, because you know, it sounds like you were so like laser focused on this is what I want and this is not what I want. And I think that's really helped.
Yeah, definitely. It's probably at times been like, I think my mum's like, you put yourself under too much stress, because you're like, she's like, you know, But yeah, it's probably it's I think definitely that, like, going with your gut and, you know, like you said, going with like the vision, that's something that was so important to me. And I knew what I wanted to create. And but then also I not being so naive and just creating something that you want, but actually talking to your target market. So I'm not a mum myself. So probably think it's quite mad because I'm targeting mums, but I have a lot of mums around me who are my cousins and my aunties, my family, but also going, maybe sometimes they will give me information, just that's maybe trying to make me feel better. But actually going to other mums, and like I'm constantly, when I, you know, on Instagram or like mums even just like, you know, talking to like next to a table that I've met, asking them like, what do you think, to try and get their feedback. Because they're the people that, you know, are going to be buying the product. So I really need to, even though I've got this vision, and keep it like in a clear, sustainable and good looking way, but finding out what they really want and they really need, and making sure that it's products that they actually want to buy as well.
That is such a good point, and I'm so glad you brought that up as well, because you're right. When you have a clear vision, it can be so easy to get stuck in your vision and not think about the people who are buying it. But I guess they're the same but different also, I guess, because I mean your vision was, you know, to have products that are sustainable and reusable. But then I guess the other things around sort of how they look and sort of themes and color, I don't know, colors and all, I guess there's lots of other things that, you know, it's great that your customers are able to give you input on. And yeah, it's brilliant you were doing that, and I can see that from your post you're still doing that as well. So it's great that you're talking to your customers so much, because they will obviously tell you what they need, which will really help inform things going forwards. What I am really interested in as well, Kira, is, so obviously traditional, when I say traditional, I guess I mean plastic party products have been around, like, you know, since I was a kid, and I'm quite old now. You know, like balloons and paper plates that go in the bin and things like that. So what, I guess it's a two-part question. So are you finding there's a lot of education you need to do around, you know, why people need to be thinking about more sustainable party products? And if so, sort of how are you addressing that? Because I guess that's quite a challenge, that people might not be always looking to buy sustainable, although I think things are moving in that direction. And sorry, because I've asked you quite a lot of questions in one. I was trying to think of a more succinct way of saying that.
Yeah, no, that makes completely sense. So yeah, I mean, you know, I'm 23 now, but I remember growing up and we had plastic, everything at my parties, plastic, you know, party bags, plastic plates, everything was. And the more I kind of researched into, you know, why plastic was an issue, was so only 9% of plastics in the UK actually get recycled. So you put them into the bin. And just the way kind of like our waste infrastructure is, that only 9% get recycled, which is huge. And then these plastic items, which we use once, take hundreds of years to decompose. And then they also think that in 2050, there's going to be more plastic in the ocean than fish, which is a scary thing as well. And obviously the micro, I've got the word now, the plastic microfiber, that's it. They're going into the ocean, and they're going, and then fish are eating them, and then the fish, we're eating the fish. And then also, sorry, I can go into this quite a lot, but also, you know, if you have like plastic in the soil that goes to landfill, and then that can get into our water system, then we can drink the microfibers. So it's quite a scary thing, I think, to think that, you know, plastic, I know it seems harmless and you use it once, but actually, you know, millions of people do use these plastic items, then it can cause such like a damaging effect to our planet. And I think even though, you know, some plastics are recycled, just because of the way the waste infrastructure is, it doesn't actually get recycled. So trying to move away completely from the plastic products, and as I said earlier, you know, plastic free in both the product and the packaging. So not just having like a paper product, but actually then having the packaging be made of tissue paper as well. So it doesn't have the plastic aspect. And I'm not, you know, saying plastic is like the worst thing ever, but I definitely want to, for me and the research that I've done, it doesn't feel right having any plastic in the business. But also I know that paper, you know, has its challenges as well. Paper is more likely to be recycled, and then if it went to landfill, it takes a few weeks to decompose rather than a few years. So that's why going more down the and adding more reusable products is definitely something that I want to consider, and I have considered and want to add to. So yeah, that's in a nutshell. So I think I went on and waffled there.
No, you didn't at all. That's so interesting. And that fact, I don't know if you saw my face when you said the fact about, you know, plastic and the fish. I was like, what? That's just scary. And yeah, and with, just it's something that I don't know. So with paper party products, so I'm thinking plates and cups, can they be disposed of in your... Are they biodegradable, or are they sort of recyclable, like you'd recycle copper? Because I think once you have food on plates, you can't recycle them. Is that correct?
Yes. Yeah. And I'm glad you brought that up, because that is something that, you know, is in my mind actually constantly. So with the cups and stuff, it's fine. You can get rid of the drink and you can just put them in the recycling bin. But the cups that we have can also be, so it's quite confusing, but in the UK, we've got home composted and then we've got industrially composted. So industrially composted means that it goes to this waste unit and it can decompose, but it's done in an industrial environment. And there is a difference between home composting and industrial composted. Not all products can do both. With our cups, they can be home composted, they can also be industrial composted, and they can be recycled. I recommend, so we've got like a page what we recommend to do. I recommend always recycling them, because then they can go back and they can be reused and made into new products. So that's what my stance is. But say if you did get them covered in food or whatever, then you could like cut them up and then literally put them in your compost at home, and that wouldn't be an issue. And similar with the plates. So with the plates, if you have, you know, some kind of like, you know, like cake or something like that that hasn't got food all over the cake, all over the plate, then it can be recycled. It goes into this big kind of container, and like the water will kind of get rid of any of the residue and so forth. But if, you know, say you get it covered in ketchup and other, you know, other products like sauces and stuff like that, you can cut it up, the plates, and you can put them again in your home compost. That's not an issue. Most household units don't have waste structures that go to industrially composted units, so I don't recommend that. Or it can go, if you do get food over, it can go to landfill, but it will decompose in a few weeks instead of a few years. But that's definitely something that's on my mind with the plates, because even though they are better than plastic, I think we can do so much better. And I don't want to let too much off, but I've got some ideas coming in, you know, the next kind of 6 to 8 months of what we can do plate wise. So yes, watch the space.
Oh, that's really exciting. And a reason I asked that is because I didn't realize for a long time. So we obviously recycle cardboard, but I didn't realize for a long time that if cardboard or paper plates had food on them, that they couldn't be recycled. I genuinely didn't realize that. And then when I did realize that, I switched to not recycling them. But that's really interesting what you said at home composting, so thank you, that is a great tip. So I could take leftover paper plates and then put them in the home. That's, thank you for that, because that's, you know, I think when we want to be doing our bit, it's really frustrating when you feel like you can't recycle something, but you sort of, especially when you've bought paper plates because you want to do your bit for the environment, and then you find out that you can't actually recycle them. So that's really useful.
Yeah, just double check on if you do buy paper plates or so forth, double check they don't have a PLA lining, which is like a plastic lining, because if they do, then they can't be home composted because the PLA lining's on it. So a lot of paper plates, that was another issue I came across, is, and that's why we haven't actually got any branded plates yet, is because I couldn't find a manufacturer. I actually have found one now, which is great, but I couldn't find a manufacturer who didn't have that PLA lining on the plates. So yeah, just something to think about. I think sometimes we think all paper plates, but actually if they've got the plastic lining on, then, you know, you wouldn't be able to do that.
I had absolutely no idea that was a thing. So I'm learning so much. Yeah, and speaking of that, so I guess there's two things. So you mentioned a page. Is there something you send to customers when they order from you then to explain how to reuse and recycle their products?
Yeah, I actually have it. I'll quickly just show you here. It's like a little, so yeah, for everyone listening, it's like a little kind of leaflet thing, and then they can scan it, and it says scan me, and it will tell them how to dispose of their products in the correct way. Because I think there is a lot of misconception about, but I've got this product, what do I do with it? Like, I'm constantly thinking that, like, I'll buy something from the supermarket and I try and buy, you know, zero waste. So I'll try and go like more local and not have, and go and get my fruit and veg, but they're not wrapped in plastic. But I'm not perfect, and sometimes I might have to run to the supermarket to get it. And, you know, sometimes they don't have it on the back, like what you need to do. And it's really frustrating because you're like, well, what do I do with this product now? So I've tried to break it down quite clearly and like how you dispose of each product, and if it's got food on it, how to do it. If it's, you know, not contaminated, then what you can do with it. And most people might know, but I just thought that sometimes, you know, you don't know, and you can kind of be looking, and it's kind of teaching and educating what's the right thing to do. So, yeah.
Absolutely. And you're right. I think a lot of people don't always know. I mean, I've certainly been in that situation where I've looked at something and thought, can I recycle this? Can't I recycle it? And then obviously the rules for where you, everywhere you live, can be quite different. So where we live, for example, we can't recycle, you know, like Tetra Pak. Like, imagine you get, I'm thinking we have oat milk and it comes in these cartons. Yeah. I think in some places you can recycle them, but we can't recycle them. And I think when it's confusing for people, when they're like, what bin does this go in, and can I recycle this, or what do I do with that? It just makes it less likely that people are going to do it, I think, because it's just not as easy.
Oh, definitely. And I think we definitely have an issue in the UK, because every council is different and it's so confusing. Like, it took me, when I was researching for Pico, it took me months to kind of work out what you could do with these products, and the difference between, like I said, industrial composting and normal composting, and the different waste units that different councils have. And I think, you know, you have to take a long, like, I took a long time researching this, and a lot of people, fair enough to them, maybe haven't even thought about it or just don't have the time to. You know, so it is confusing, and I think we definitely, as a country, we have to get better, because if we could get smarter and more efficient in it, I think it could be so much better, and really help to like reduce our waste as well.
Definitely. And coming back to the sort of education around this, are you finding you're having to do lots of education before people buy from you? So lots of posts and talking about the benefits of buying your products versus traditional plastic ones, or are you finding that people are generally already pretty brought in?
I think, yeah, people are quite excited. The one, two things that I really wanted to have because, you know, the eco-friendly, sustainable side, and, you know, have that really strong, that's like at our core, but also have these really great looking products that, you know, people don't feel like, oh, I'll buy from them because they're sustainable, but actually like, oh no, I'm going to buy from them because their products are actually great. Like, they've got, they look great. They've got that eco-friendly aspect. Like, that's why I want to. So it's like almost, you know, it's a really great benefit. They are sustainable, but they still want to purchase these products. They look great. So, you know, there is a bit of an educational piece, but most people I've spoken to really like that aspect of it. And most people really like the designs as well. Which has been great. So yeah, I'd say a little bit, but mostly people are brought in, definitely.
Yeah, thank you for answering. I was just really curious. I think you're right, actually, that I'm seeing just myself, just when I go and look, a lot more products now do seem to be going that way anyway. So for example, if you went on Amazon and you searched for party bags, I want to say that the first, however many, but first page of results are all paper. I'm fairly sure that when I last looked, they were all, you know, paper bags, whereas I'm sure 10 years ago, maybe even 5 years ago, the best-selling ones would have all been those plastic ones we remember from when we were kids. So I do think that things are definitely moving that way, which I think is great, because I think it's always harder when you're having to sort of explain to people why they need your product. But I think, yeah, it sounds like that isn't needed, which is, I think it makes it a lot easier starting point.
And I think something I just want to like mention as well, it's like, I think definitely with sustainable products, they are a bit more expensive just because, you know, the route you've had to, it's still a newish concept and, you know, plastic and so forth is a cheaper option at the moment. But one thing that I really want is, at the moment, you know, I'd probably say my target market is people with a bit more money because they can afford, you know, these party products. But I definitely want, as we grow, I don't want to be an exclusive brand where it's like, you know, only if you have a lot of money you can buy the products. I really want it to be a brand that is inclusive and still, you know, keeping that eco-friendly aspect, but you know, making it a bit potentially a bit more affordable for everyone. And I think with time, as you know, things go on, hopefully that will happen, because the kind of the paper products will come, the unit costs will become a bit cheaper, which will mean that I can do that.
Oh yeah, I really love the vision you've got. Every time you talk about sort of your plans, I'm really just think, I'm just so impressed. I can't believe that you're 23 and you've got such a clear vision for what you want to do. And I don't mean that in a patronizing way. I'm just thinking back to when I was 23. I don't think I was very clear on anything really. So I'm not trying to be patronized. I'm basically thinking back to myself. I certainly, didn't. Yeah, I don't think I felt so strongly about anything. So I'm super impressed. And yeah, and I wonder as well whether, as things change, whether there'll be more suppliers in the UK who can do what you want as the demand increases, which I think it will. Like you said, I think am I right in saying you are the first company to be producing these products at the moment?
I haven't found any other company that, you know, their main kind of like route of their like for party products that is, you know, they've got like a real focus on sustainability. If anyone listening has, let me know. But I haven't found any in the market at the moment. I think with the UK, one thing that I'm really keen is, I think more suppliers will hopefully come to the UK, which will be great. But I think maybe bringing it more in-house, so making the products actually, you know, I'd love to have, this is another really good vision, I'd love to have, you know, a place that we make all the products ourselves, like in a unit, you know, it again, so it's not like we're going all around the country and trying to reduce the emissions even further if we get everything made in-house. So I'm not sure that's definitely the way it's going to go. It might not be, but that's something that I would love to do.
That makes total sense as well. I can see sort of having everything under one roof. I can see that would be a benefit. And yet again, I'm really just blown away by your vision. And I also feel as well that while I think you are, it sounds like you probably are the first, or at least one of the first to do this, I don't think you're going to be the last. I think that other companies are going to start following what you're doing, which I think is amazing to be like out there ahead. But hopefully as more companies think, oh, actually we could, you know, as more companies maybe spring up or adapt to become more sustainable, hopefully that will change the supply as well, because I guess manufacturers will then also have to adapt if companies are saying, okay, we're moving away from plastic and we're moving more this way. It'd be really interesting. I would love to see, hopefully I will be able to see in sort of in 10 years time where we are and how much things have moved on, because I really think they will.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think, you know, as a company, you can stay in what was before. And I have seen some party companies, you know, trying to change a little bit of their product ranges and so forth to align to be more eco-friendly. And yeah, I think it's great. I think it would, if you stayed thinking, you know, we can just sell everything. I think as well, people have changed, like people's consume, like what they want. Like, I think that cheap looking party, you know, like the foil type material, I just don't really think people want that anymore either. Like, I think people want something that looks a bit more, a slightly more premium. I think, you know, as consumers, they are changing as well. So, and I think it is consumer driven that is making these companies change as well.
Definitely. And I wonder as well if, you know, as well as the consumers, I'm assuming that there'll be change to legislation around, you know, what products are made from, for example. And I mean, I'm hoping anyway that things are going to move in a way where it becomes harder for companies to produce products that aren't sustainable when there is a sustainable option. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, 100%. I mean, I think they're definitely there's even talk, you know, of like getting rid of like single use plastic and stuff like that. The government has spoken about it. So I think it is coming. And yeah, I welcome it. I think it's good. Like, I'm not naive enough to think I'm just going to be the only eco-friendly, you know, party business. But I definitely, yeah, I want more businesses to be like that. And I think it's great that they, you know, people are thinking business is changing. But I also think, you know, you need to be careful that these businesses aren't saying they're doing like, you know, greenwashing. They're saying they're doing something really great, but actually, you know, they're maybe covering something up. They're doing one thing that's great, but actually all the other things are not so good. So, and that's where, again, we have to do like your kind of like consumer due diligence. And that's tricky because, you know, you don't have loads of time to be reading up about, I mean, I do read quite a lot on like brands and stuff like that, but a lot of people don't. So hopefully I think laws will come in as well where people can't, you know, greenwash and say something is when it's not.
Yeah. And actually, would you mind, I mean, I know what greenwashing is, but would you mind just explaining it for anyone who doesn't? Please.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm going to get the definition completely right, but it's where a business is claiming to be sustainable or eco-friendly. Maybe they're saying they're doing one thing, but actually they're kind of deceiving the consumer, and they're maybe doing one thing that's good, or maybe even not really doing that thing, but then actually in the background are not as sustainable or eco-friendly as they're making out.
That makes sense. So for example, maybe they're, you know, all their products, the products are sustainable, but they're flying them over from China and causing, you know, loads of emissions or something like that.
Yeah, definitely. And they're not being completely transparent. And I think that's really important to be as transparent as possible. Like I've said before, you know, I think we're starting great, you know, making the products as sustainable as possible for what's in the realm, but I think there's still so much more that I can do and so much that you know, and I'm going to keep pushing to do that.
Yeah, and I've no doubt that you will and that you are doing that. And before we finish, I've got two more questions. First thing is there anything around your own sustainability practices that you haven't mentioned, anything that you're doing or you're moving towards that you haven't talked about? Because we know you're not greenwashing us, because we can tell that you are definitely fully on board. Is there anything we haven't spoken about?
I guess, I'm trying to think, nothing. The only other thing is... I guess trying to go with, I actually heard this in one of your podcasts before. We do plant a tree with every order, just to help, you know, reduce the offset. But at the moment, yeah, that's kind of like, I'd say with how the products are made and the like life, the afterlife, and trying to keep things close to the UK. Those are the main core things that we have at the moment. But yeah, always looking for more ways.
I did see the planting at the tree on your website as well, and I just want to make sure I gave the opportunity for you to talk about that if you wanted to. And then finally, and this is the last question I ask everyone, Kira, what would your number one piece of advice be for other product creators?
Oh, yeah, I saw this. I would say time, just like give it time, because, you know, we've only been started for 3 months, but I am in such a different place to where I was when I first started, and I'm in such a different place to when before I started. I know so much more now from 3 months ago, and then 3 months before that, I know so much more. And you just have to, you know, I think we hear about these overnight successes of people that they start, and that's amazing that they do. They start businesses and they're a success straight away. But actually, I think, you know, to start a business, you really do need to have time, and you also need to have resilience, which I'm sure, you know, most founders know about. You have to keep kind of going and don't burn yourself out, but give yourself time and really, you know, I would just say just keep going, and you'll be, if you're stuck in somewhere right now, take a break, and then you know, take a moment to kind of think everything over, and then in, you'll probably look back in 3 months' time and be like, I got over that, and then I'm on to the next hurdle type thing. So yeah, just I would say give it time to get orders up, and give it time to, you know, learn so much more to get to the next stage.
Thank you. I think that's really good advice. And you're right, because I think it can be really tempting to, I would be really tempting to sort of do everything quickly, or you can get really disheartening that things take time. But I definitely think it's worth spending that time. And that, a lot of the, what am I trying to say? I think there's so much more time up front than you realize, but it's all the stuff that's really important, like all the research and the stuff that feels like maybe you're not actually getting anywhere. But I think it's really good groundwork to be doing.
Definitely. Like, I think about it when I was just, you know, sat on my desk every morning, and Pico was really just a vision. I remember thinking, is it ever gonna become like reality? Like, at one point I was like, am I really gonna get there? And if I can think of myself a year ago, I feel like, really, wow, okay, I did it. Like, it's just a start, and there's so much to come, and I'm so excited about that. But I didn't, in a sense, I didn't think I'd be here at one point, but I am. And then hopefully, you know, I've got visions for the next 6 months and next year, and hopefully I can look back and be like, I actually did get here, and, you know, be proud of that.
And I think as well that it seems like a long time, but then I mean, I was mentioning big one before we started recording that we last spoke last year, and to me, the time in which between we last spoke and speaking to you today, when I look at how much you've done in that time, I just go, wow, you've done such a lot in a short space of time. So I think often we're quite hard on ourselves as well. But yeah, whenever you speak to any sort of company founder, they've always been working on it for much longer than you'd think. And actually, even a lot of like massive companies now, and I know we're all small businesses, but when you even talk to massive companies, some of them took like 5, 10, 15 years to actually get to be, you know, a household name, or in some cases get to be selling anything much at all, really, you know, see any kind of success. So I just think, yeah, we're often quite hard on ourselves, but it really doesn't matter how long it takes, does it?
No, I know. And I think that is, again, maybe we have, like I said, you know, you see things, like I even saw things and I was like, oh, but like you see these overnight success stories and all these kind of things, but I don't think most companies do actually, it does happen like that. So yeah, don't be disheartened that if, you know, I would say don't be disheartened if that doesn't happen for you, because yeah, there's so many companies that it didn't happen, but they have been huge successes, but it's taken time. So yeah, just give it time.
Yeah, I think overnight success is actually a myth. And I'm pleased, if anyone wants to prove me wrong on that, that's fine. But I would say 9 times out of 10, it's a myth. And that actually that overnight success has probably been working away quietly for much longer than any of us realise.
Yeah, I agree. But yeah, let us know, anyone, if prove us wrong.
Yeah, I'm sure I will be proven wrong on that. Well, thank you so much, Kim. It was so lovely to talk to you. Thank you so much for all you shared. As I said, I'm just so impressed by your vision and by everything you've achieved and everything that's to come as well, because I've got a feeling that, yeah, there's a lot to come.
Yeah, no, thank you so much for having me. I actually am someone who really always listens to podcasts. So it's kind of been a dream to be on a podcast one day. So thank you.
Oh, you're so welcome. Thank you so much for listening right to the end of this episode. Do remember that you can get the full back catalogue and lots of free resources on my website, vickyweinberg.com. Please do remember to rate and review this episode if you've enjoyed it, and also share it with a friend who you think might find it useful. Thank you again, and see you next week. Hi, this is just a little note. So if you've enjoyed this episode, or indeed any of the episodes, and you would like to, I don't know, buy me a coffee or something, you can actually now leave tips. So there's a link to how to do this in the show note. Of course, do not feel obliged to do this. This is a free podcast. This will always be a free podcast. But as I say, if you want to buy me a coffee, you can do that via the link in the show notes.